Welcome to Inside the Program, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Joe Cook. We got Eric Nalin talking about the latest from Texas Longhorns football practice. Make sure you like this video. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. And of course, head to InsideTexas.com. Join for just $1. Gets you access to the best Texas Longhorns community. All our insider intel related to the team. It's prep for the season. Recruiting. Get you all the best inside info you're going to want to know about your Longhorns. So sign up. The link is the first one in our description. And go buy Paul Wadlington's Thinking Texas Football, the best Longhorn preview out there. Every position, every player, every opponent, every SEC team, a look at the landscape of college football, and Eric's look at the 2025 class. Today, we'll be talking about Texas working on key situations, running back depth shining during these past few practices, veteran defensive linemen leading the way, positive progress on special teams, and then how Texas has first world progress on defense. Eric, those key situations we're talking about, one of them is the one that kind of ended Texas season. Red zone problems made a lot of problems for Texas last year, and they've shown that to be a big area of focus in the past few days.
Yeah. I was talking to the Houston Lunch Bunch yesterday. My guy, Charles, I hadn't seen him in a while. He pulled me aside afterwards and asked me about that call, actually. You know, what were my thoughts about it? I'm like, you know, I've got mixed emotions on it. I'm not one to second guess Sark on these minute details. But, you know, obviously red zone as a whole was an issue. It's really frustrating because they started off last year really well. I wrote, you know, the first half of the season, they had a really good red zone rate. And a lot of those were going for touchdowns. And they kind of broke down over time. I guess they got figured out. They got solved. You know, they spent a lot of time on red zone. This goes back to last year, the years before, too. They knew it was an issue going into last year. It was an issue from the preceding season. They spent a lot of time on it. That's about all I can say. But they spent a massive amount of time on red zone during the season. Tuesdays will be dedicated to first and second down. Wednesday will be third and red zone. So they're putting in all the time necessary. Now, here's something that's interesting. They're liking Jack Endrys down there quite a bit. Arch Manning and him seem to have a good rapport given the amount of time, the limited amount of time that they've played together. And Andrews, it sounds like he's a pretty decent threat down there, maybe more than we heard of Gunnar Helmer and even Jatavion Sanders the year prior. They didn't get a whole lot of touchdowns in the red zone that I can recall. Jatavion had that pretty good breakout season the year before he left, where I think he had five or six touchdowns. But overall, they haven't used the tight end a whole lot in the red zone. I think that's about to change. Also, a better, more fully functioning running game to include the quarterback is expected to help things out quite a bit. I'm bullish on red zone being improved. I think they've got the quarterback to sort of solve that. And when everything all else fails, he can go do what he did against A&M and just truck it in.
I found it kind of interesting that a lot of what you wrote about and a lot of the guys that you named, they're pass options. And I think everybody understands, like, yeah, you just got to move the guy in front of you. And Texas understands that well, but you have to be multifaceted. And it looks like they're trying to find the right facets at work for passing the ball.
Yeah. I should mention that, you know, Kalik Lockett had some red zone looks with the ones. Now, you know, they do all kinds of different situational football the day before. They were doing a play action pass, run game play action pass. A lot of times they do tempo, even though Sark doesn't use a whole lot of tempo. I think that's to help the defense as much as anything. But they do all these situations. So I don't know if that this was just a red zone thing or if it was just working Kalik Lockett in more, keeping Wingo a little bit more limited as he returns to the playing field. But Kalik Lockett, you know, in theory, on paper, Kalik Lockett is a devastating player in the red zone, given his length. I had somebody at that Houston Lunch Bunch ask me if he was like 6'4 or 6'5. And I say, no, he's actually like 6'2. It's just he looks that way with his arms. That's kind of where I've gotten the comp to Josh Doctson from TCU. He's just plays a lot longer than he actually is, at least it corresponds to his height. So he's gotten some red zone looks. That could be interesting. I could see that. Maybe not for this year, but certainly down the road. But, you know, Parker Livingston, he's got jump ball skills. He can make plays in the air. I'm bullish on them fixing a whole lot of ills that we saw the last 2 years. You know, I've talked about special teams. I think those are pretty basically solved. I think red zone issues are on their way to being solved too.
One of the areas that will maybe help with that, and not just inside the 20, but between the 22, is running back depth. And from what you wrote, it kind of sounds like Chad Scott should be sending at least one or two thank yous up to Shard Choice, because there are a lot of great options in that room playing well over the past couple of days.
Yeah, every time first I got to give Trey Wisner some love, because every time, you know, we start talking about another running back, it seems like he hits another gear, and he's had a really good week after missing a practice last week. So he's going to be tough to catch. But I'm so much more bullish on this run game than I was last year, at least the running back room. Obviously, the offensive line is going to play an integral part of how effective the running backs are. But they've got four guys that are playable, and then James Simon looks like he's going to be a good player down the stretch or in the future. And then, Ricky Stewart, fast running back, tough running back, still in the playbook a little bit. There's just a whole lot more options to keep Trey Wisner fresh. I think that's going to be a key for this season is limiting his touches against the also-rans. You know, in September, Trey Wisner should get about five carries. He's going to get more than that, but he shouldn't be playing in the second half. So I think he's going to have a lot more tread on the tire in November, December, January, thanks to this deeper running back room. And I still would not sleep on somebody like Christian Clark or Jarrett Gibson surprising everybody and, running for 700-800 yards.
Should be a lot of fun to see. And, C.J. Baxter, it sounds like we haven't heard a bad thing yet, and that's still good news a year and 2 days after the injury.
He's gaining confidence and strength in his knee. Yeah, that injury obviously meant a lot to him. He went on social media and said it was a year anniversary. I think that was on the 6th. So obviously he's still coming back, but he was mentioned early, and this was part of the red zone portion where I was getting information from as well, where he's definitely trusting his knees and he's getting stronger. I've got pretty high expectations for him this season. I'm still not entirely sure what my expectations are should be for the first game, but we still got a lot of August to figure that out.
Switching over to the other side of the ball, Texas, their efforts in the transfer portal at defensive line, I think we've made pretty clear now, help to reshape that room, not just for this year, but for the coming years. But as far as 2025 goes, we've been saying hockey shifts, and more it sounds like hockey shifts is what's going to be coming down the pike for the Texas defense.
Yeah, one of the main focus points for me this August is getting an idea of the groupings and how deep they're going to play on the defensive tackle line, D-tackle. Right now, I think it's Hero Canoe and Travis Shaw with the first team. Still, that's how they were when they rolled out the first day in front of us. That's still the case. They love what both guys bring to the table as far as experience, leadership. Maybe not experience so much as Hero Canoe as far as playing time, but experience in a really strong program. He's got leadership intangibles. And then Travis Shaw is, you talk about a contract year. We could write an article about all the guys in a contract year. They can downplay it all they want. But Travis Shaw is in a contract year. A real one. He's gone after this season. So he's playing like it. I'm getting asked a lot about Murad Watson. Right now, I think Murad is with the threes because I think it's Brevard and Alex January with the twos. Now, that doesn't mean that Murad Watson isn't going to start. Doesn't mean he's going to play a lot. They're going to play a lot. They're all going to play a lot. One thing we did miss was LaVon Johnson missed the first 2 weeks of practices. I didn't know that he was out. Maybe we should have asked more about him. And he's back now. And so, in his absence, Josiah Sharma, that would explain why we saw Josiah Sharma in those early pursuit drills. Remember that first day? We were like, we think that was Sharma, right? Sharma is really impressive. Sharma could play this year. No doubt he could be in that six-man rotation. Maybe they have to go to 7 or 8 at certain times of the year because Justice Terry is going to play as well. Justice Terry is still moonlighting just kind of up and down the defensive line, but he's with the defensive tackles. That room is loaded. That room has a lot more high character than you normally find in the D-tackle room, guys that can be like overall team leaders, guys that are leaders in the weight room. And because of that, the competition is going to be fierce. It's probably going to be ongoing into the season. They're in a very good spot. I couldn't be more bullish. And probably the most exciting thing I heard, we're hearing about Brevard on second team. I said, the guys like Brevard's really talented. And, that's not a word I've heard associated with him a whole lot. We hear the hard worker, but I see talent in his Purdue tape. I definitely see it. It was good to hear a source say that. So I asked him, I said, is he going to be drafted? He said, definitely, definitely. And they said, of course, Travis Shaw is going to be drafted too. So I'm really excited about that room. I have no concerns about that room based on what I've heard going into the season.
Should be a lot of fun to watch the big boys do work. Before we keep going, got to show some love to our sponsor. That is Academy.
All right. Who's ready?
I'm open.
You've talked a lot about how, and you mentioned it earlier, special teams is going to be better. One of the things that's going to help special teams be better is Jack Bouwmeester. Michael Kern punted like a freshman. Even Jeff Banks was kind of talking about how the expectation for him was just kick it, just let it go. We'll figure it out later. With Bouwmeester, it sounds like he can do a lot more and make that punt team a little bit more dangerous like it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, they're in love with this guy behind the scenes. Like, you know, potential All-American. It's interesting he trains with Michael Dixon. I don't know how much that matters with punting, but, you know, that doesn't hurt. You know, at the practices, I was doing a mental clock on the my phone was overheating, so I couldn't do an actual timer. You know how hot it was out there. So I had to do it, you know, the one Mississippi thing. And I was getting above five on a number of those kicks, and I ran that by a source last night. He's like, yeah, he's over five all the time. He has more hang times in practice, each practice, like three or four of them, the equivalent of the best ones that they had all last year. So punting is in an entirely different situation. And then the skill matters too, right? We saw him angling punts out of bounds. He's going to be a steal. You know, I posted him one of my tweets last night. They've got a secret weapon. He is a secret weapon. I'm not going to say he's Michael Dixon, but he's a massive upgrade. And I do believe special teams is going to be a lot better. And you talk about those close games where the margins are really tight. Hitting yardage is a big part of that, and that's where special teams comes in. I couldn't be more excited about him. And then you outfit him with some really good gunners. They've got some gunners to go out and pin these guys too. So couldn't be more excited about that. Special teams in a great spot. I'm hearing nothing but excitement about it. They put a lot of effort into it. It's like red zone. It's eventually going to get fixed. How long does it take to get fixed? It's a little bit frustrating for the fans when there's a blip. But if you go by Jeff Banks' track record, that's why I was trying to get on my readers last year. Like, hey, go by the standard, not the outliers, okay? You know, it goes back to PK, his first year. That was an outlier year. So there's obviously a lot of context we need to figure out. The context for special teams last year, we laid out a lot. There's a lot of reason based on fixing all those issues to be excited about it. I think special teams is going to do its part this year, where, you know, last year the defense was kind of hung out to dry. I think special teams is going to do its part.
I know there was concern about him punting at altitude because Utah is at about 4,600 feet. Doesn't sound like there are any. And also, he punted well, not at altitude last year. Right. So this is going to be and we haven't seen those Michael Dixon to Josh Thompson moments like we had in the past couple of years. Sanborn did it some, but Michael Kern just wasn't able to do it. And that's just lethal when you can do that and basically send a pass off the foot to somebody standing on the 3-yard line.
Yeah, that was fun to watch. Yeah, so I mentioned the context about it, you know, punting at elevation. This guy looks like a stronger guy than what I expected they got. You know, I think he's just continually getting stronger. This guy's going to play in the NFL.
Finally, this is always a great note to end on. First world problems on defense. You can only put 11 on the field, but having to figure out who those 11 are, it's proven to be tough and makes it seem like they're going to have to put a lot of different players, maybe almost more than 20 on the field for Texas in 2025. Not at one time, obviously, yeah, but over the course of a game.
This conversation stems from us going over, you know, depth chart discussion. You know, we already talked about 60 tackles are going to play, probably 7. They can't have Justice Terry not playing. Man, Josiah Sharman might be the best defensive tackle right now of that freshman. They love those freshmen, by the way. They feel like they hit on all 3. So, you know, I was like, so what the hell is going to happen? Guy goes, well, a lot of guys are going to play a lot. And so, you know, there's going to be times that they have to trim down the playing time. You know, you talk about going into Athens, you're not going to see as many people as you would versus Arkansas. But they're going to play a lot of guys. Now, there are going to be some egos to manage. Right now, everybody's selfless, but right now everybody's playing a lot. It's practice, right? So at some point when that, you know, that first week against Ohio State might be a little dicey. They're not going to play nearly as many guys as they're going to play all of September. But it truly is a first world problem. They've got 6 guys at edge that need to play. Zena Umiozulu needs to play. Brad Spence, you got to play him, right? He's a junior that gave up a lot of playing time at Arkansas to come to Texas. Obviously, Colin Simmons, you don't want to take him off the field unless he just needs a break. But how often does Superman need a break? Ethan Burke has to play. Obviously, he's a starter. Colton Vosick right behind him. And then you got a 5-star Lance Jackson, just a total specimen, a freak, and then on the top of it does all the things the right way. So just that, we're just talking about edge, and they got 6 guys to play. Don't even get me started on the DBs. They're all over the place. They need to play. So yeah, it's a first world problem, and it could actually become a problem if guys aren't getting enough snaps. That could be something for the coaches to manage. But overall, you know, guys are going to play. Some guys might get dinged up. That'll open up more playing time for others. It is a great problem to have, especially with a long schedule.
Man, to watch that defense last year and to think that there's room for improvement is still pretty exciting to hear. So thank you for watching. Make sure you like this video. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. And, of course, head to InsideTexas.com. Full reports on Texas practice. There's a scrimmage tomorrow. We'll have insight on that. If you join for just $1, you'll get access to the best Texas Longhorns community, all the best info, best coverage, and we'll throw in a full year of access to The Athletic as well. Also, make sure you buy Paul Wadlington's Thinking Texas Football. Covers the entirety of the team, the schedule, the conference, college football. And, of course, Eric, you take a look at the 2025 class and a number of those guys who are going to be making impacts and a few you talked about already today. So thank you for watching. We'll see you next time on Inside the Program, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.